very good Friday. Welcome to this edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Coming up in the show here today, we'll bring you feature agricultural news reports, and then we'll check in with national and regional agricultural news headlines as well. And we get started with regional agricultural news right after this.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
California's trade mission to Japan has not only highlighted agricultural trade and climate collaboration, but also has laid the foundation for connections on ag tech. That according to the California Department of Food and Agriculture. From enhanced microbial flora in biochar to new opportunities in soil amendments to address drought and extreme heat, Japan is a strong partner in helping to accelerate climate solutions. CDFA Secretary Karen Ross and a California Ag delegation visited with Ag Venture Lab and Tagali, two accelerator programs focused on developing proof of concepts for startup business within the agricultural and manufacturing sectors. Feature companies included Towing and AgPlanta, along with other businesses focusing on robotics, new alternative chemical solutions, and polymer developed from waste streams. Japan's ag startup sector is dedicated to finding sustainable, equitable, and climate-smart solutions to assist farmers and ranchers in enhancing on-farm practices for food production. The recent visit to Japan has built upon long-standing trade partnerships in the fresh fruit, tree nut, and dried fruit sectors and has provided business and climate connections for the rice sector and organics, according to CDFA. Widespread flooding from continuing atmospheric storms have caused extensive damage for California agriculture, with more storms expected this month. Water from recent storms flooded dairies and carried silt and debris into citrus groves in Tulare County, flooded fields of leafy greens and berries in Monterey County, and impacted livestock and feed crops in Humboldt County. Executive Director Norm Groot of the Monterey County Farm Bureau said this month's damages could top January's estimated $336 million in agricultural storm losses. U.S. almond prices recently hit an 11-month high, driven by ongoing weather concerns over the coming crop and several successive months of strong shipments. The Mintec benchmark prices for standard 5% almond was assessed at $1.81 recently. This is the highest the benchmark has been since April of 2022 and 36 cents a pound higher than the assessment in January of 2023, which was the lowest price since 2003. A succession of storms and cold weather over bloom, the period during which most almond trees are pollinated, has limited bee hours and led to damage to trees and orchards. One handler stated the bees have had so little time to fly, some of them seem to be starving in their hives. Selling interest remains limited as sellers continue to size up the potential impacts of the storms and poor weather on a coming crop. At the same time, buyers continue to look to lock in supplies in a rising market, pushing prices even higher. The February position report released by the Almond Board of California on March 9th showed February almond shipments reached 245.74 million pounds, a record for the month. The shipment figure comes in 11.53 million pounds above the previous February record seen in 2021. The figure topped the majority of industry expectations, with most market participants surveyed by Mintec ahead of the release on the reporting figures of 230 to 240 million pounds. Crop receipts came in at 2.52 billion pounds by the end of February, down 13% from the same point last season. Market participants expect the final crop receipt figure to come in close to 2.50 to 2.55 billion pounds, lower than the 2.60 billion seen in the USDA objective estimate, but not by a large enough margin to significantly change the supply-demand balance. New sales saw 190 million pounds on the books, 4% below the three-year average. The total industry sold position came in at 68%, flat against last year's figure. Grub Market has announced the launch of its Sustainable California Initiative, a commitment to promote and enhance agricultural sustainability in California by making meaningful investments from a portion of its net profits in the following endeavors: preserving the farming environment of the Central Valley and other areas of California through methods such as planting trees, promoting organic farming practices by financially supporting local farmers to obtain organic certifications, and developing innovative technologies that improve the sustainability of California's farming system in areas including farming and food procurement, sales, storage, and logistics. The Sustainable California Initiative will address the numerous challenges facing California's agriculture industry today, including water scarcity, soil depletion, environmental preservation challenges, and climate change. Grub Market is uniquely positioned to pioneer this movement due to its strong relationships with California farmers and producers and its fundamental mission to promote safer and healthier food practices and products. In addition, through active tree planting efforts in geographically and biologically diverse areas throughout California, Sustainable California aims to create greener and more sustainable environments that will deliver countless benefits to the food ecosystem. Grub Market will contribute to the reforestation of California as well, which will help reduce the collective carbon footprint, mitigate the efforts of climate change, preserve precious land that can be used to grow more fresh organic produce, and retain the underground water system, which is essential for farming. California Splendor Incorporated of San Diego is recalling certain lots of 4-pound bags of Kirkland Signature frozen organic strawberries that were sold at Costco stores in Los Angeles, Hawaii, and San Diego business centers due to an outbreak of hepatitis A illnesses. Although hepatitis A has not been detected on this product, out of an abundance of caution, consumers should stop consuming the food and return it to their local Costco store for a refund. Hepatitis A is a contagious liver disease that results from exposure to the hepatitis A virus, including from food. It can range from a mild illness lasting a few weeks to a serious illness lasting several months. 2023 to 2024 state FFA officers have been elected by delegates at the 95th annual California State FFA Leadership Conference held recently. To serve as president is Austin Bell, vice president Sierra Short, secretary McKenna Stanisai, treasurer Sydney Marich, reporter Piper Lakey, and sentinel Thomas Rosa. Candidates take part in an extensive online and in-person interview process with the state FFA nominating committee leading up to the election. The new team was announced during the closing session of the 95th State FFA Leadership Conference on March 19th. After reviewing applications and conducting virtual interviews with 49 applicants, the nominating committee selected 31 individuals to advance to in-person interviews, which were conducted during the state FFA conference. Candidates underwent 9 rounds of interviews with the state nominating committee before being slated and elected by the California Association FFA delegation. State officers commit a year of service to the California FFA Association. Throughout their year of service, the officers will interact with businesses and industry leaders, thousands of FFA members and teachers, corporate sponsors, government and education officials, local FFA leaders, and the general public. The team will lead personal growth and leadership training conferences for FFA members throughout the state and help set policies that will guide the future of FFA in California and lead to the next generation of leaders.
International Fruit Genetics, the largest table grape breeder in the world, based in Bakersfield, California, is celebrating the 20th anniversary of the breeding of the iconic cotton candy grape. Chris Owens, the lead plant breeder at IFG, discusses the history of this innovative grape.
So the history traces back about 20 years. So breeding grapes is a relatively slow process. And so the initial cross that was made to try to combine some of these interesting flavors that we knew about into a table grape took place in 2003. And so that was actually done by my predecessor. It was a guy named David Kane, who was the breeder here before me. And he was trying to, there's a lot of interesting flavors out there in the whole great wide world of grapes. And so he knew about some of these flavors and he was trying to combine them in different ways and put them into different packages and basically trying to get them into like a nice high quality seedless grape. And why it's so iconic, I think it's the combination of the flavor. You know, it's a very strong flavor, and it's got the perfect name. It tastes exactly what you would expect from something that's labeled cotton candy. It has a very pronounced kind of caramely, toffee-like toffee flavor. So I think the combination of this exciting fruit was different, unique compared to anything else out there, and had a great name to help draw attention to it and have people remember it. So I think that was what did it.
The cotton candy grape is one of the most popular types of table grapes due to the intriguing and delicious toffee-like flavor.
They are in an innovative space for table grapes, because it was basically something new. So your typical grapes, if you go into like a grocery store, you know, they're basically sold by a color. You know, there's black ones and green ones and red ones. They're not usually sold by name. They're just like color, and they're actually not very flavorful. You know, your traditional grapes, we call them like just sweet neutrals. They don't really have that much aroma. They're just kind of crunchy and sweet, and they don't really taste like all that much. And so at IFG, what we've done is we've introduced some more strongly flavored grapes. We still breed and release some of the more traditional neutral types, but we've also been trying to introduce these novel flavors into the marketplace. We think they're exciting. We think they're tasty. People like interesting flavors. And so that's one thing that we're doing that was different from anybody else, is that we were trying to introduce something completely new that didn't exist. And it's been a very successful grape for us. I mean, it's led to the development of some other strongly flavored varieties that have a different flavor profile. So we're not only releasing things that taste like cotton candy. We have other varieties as well. I don't have our production statistics in front of me, but it's one of our more widely planted grapes around the world. So it has had a pretty significant impact. If you just look at global table grape production, it's actually pretty significant.
IFG prides itself on being consumer oriented. Taste and flavor are at the top of their list for desirable characteristics. They want to ensure their consumers enjoy what they're eating.
So as a breeding company, we're very much focused on the eating quality and the flavor of the varieties we release. They still have to have a lot of other characteristics that are beneficial for the people growing them, because, you know, ultimately there's a farmer growing these things, and they have to be able to profitably do it. So like the productivity of the vines has to like be over a certain threshold, for example. But at IFG, our thinking and our way of going about it is we very much put the consumer very much higher up in the list of priorities. Like, what is someone eating this going to think about it? And to be completely honest, some of the older varieties that existed, they were, you know, there's some nice varieties, but they were mainly bred for appearance. And this is true for other fruit crops as well. They might be, they might have been selected based on the color or the appearance, or how well they store, or it could be something like how firm they are. And honestly, it doesn't eat well and was further down the list. So at IFG, what we've done is we've taken that and put it way up high near the top. You know, like, we want to excite consumers, and we want people to like the varieties that we release. We're not really interested in releasing basically something that tastes bad. You know, like, it might look good and check all the other boxes for somebody growing these things, but if it tastes bad, we're not really interested in releasing that. We do have these neutral varieties, which are more just kind of like a sweet, crunchy flavor, but they're still very enjoyable in their own right.
While the cotton candy grape is quite iconic, IFG also boasts many other delicious and interestingly flavored grapes, as well as high quality cherries.
You know, I think cotton candy is the variety that we're best known for. It was our first really strongly flavored variety. It's got this great name, and people have gotten to know it. But we have some newer ones that have not been on the market as long that have really fantastic flavors. They're completely different than cotton candy. And I am excited for people to try them. So I'm hoping that once more and more people try some of these other newer ones, that they'll get really excited about them, because there's some really cool flavors coming through the pipeline. The cherries, it's a little bit of a slower crop to breed, so they're really just starting to take off now. But we have some nice cherries that will start hitting the shelves in the near future. So, and then they're not as unique in terms of like, oh my God, I've never tasted that before, but they are, you know, very high quality, very tasty cherries.
Tamara Baker, communications manager for IFG, recommends trying the Candy Hearts grape variety for something that is less sweet than cotton candy, but equally delicious. Baker describes what sets IFG grapes apart from other table grapes.
Whenever you go to buy a grape, if you look on the bottom of the bag, typically it'll say up front, like, you know, the variety, if it is a specialized variety and not a commodity, but you can see that it says, if it's an IFG variety, it'll say this is under license by IFG. And to me, that tells me that I'm going to be getting a quality grape. So regardless of which variety you're trying, if it's an IFG variety, it's going to be the highest quality. It will have gone through multiple systems to ensure that it's the highest quality coming to consumers. So in my opinion, if you buy an IFG grape, you can't go wrong. You won't be disappointed.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
In national agricultural news, the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture released its annual Feeding the Economy report. The data shows food and agriculture industries and their suppliers contribute over $8.6 trillion to the U.S. economy. NASDA CEO Ted McKinney says the report proves the industry's continued strength across the states and around the globe. This year's report shows the U.S. food and agriculture sector directly supports nearly 23 million jobs, provides $927 billion in wages, and is particularly vital to rural communities across America. Notably, the 2023 report reveals that manufacturing agricultural products accounts for nearly one-fifth of total manufacturing jobs in the U.S. Overall, more than 46 million jobs are supported across the food and agriculture supply chain, increasing nearly 2% since the 2019 report, despite the economic challenges and disruptions associated with a global pandemic. Find the report at feedingtheeconomy.com. Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow and Ranking Ag Republican John Bozeman agreed that farm bill funding must be robust but disagreed over priorities. Stabenow's expected strongly supports SNAP funding that she and other Democrats charge Republicans are looking to cut.
When you see proposals to cut mandatory spending, and the folks talking about it are aiming at SNAP and nutrition, but they don't understand every single program in the farm bill is mandatory spending. And so that means crop insurance, that means commodity programs, you know, that means trade, title, that all of it.
But Senator Bozeman argues production agriculture is losing ground to nutrition as $867 billion for the last farm bill rises to over $1.5 trillion projected for the next one.
Almost all of that is nutrition increase. And so the farm safety nets have really not received any money with all of these outpourings of infusion of cash into farm programs. Almost all of that has been nutrition. It's been conservation. So we want to make sure that the safety nets, traditional farming, our specialty crops are well represented and they get what they need.
And when might that happen?
Can't give you the month, but I really feel very strongly we're going to get it done this year. You know, I was in the House for 9 years. I've got lots of friends over there that are kind of running the place now on both sides. There seems to be a real commitment. Don't really know how we're going to get it done, but this is true of all farm bills.
Especially this year amid not just the SNAP versus farm programs fight, but the GOP White House fight over raising the debt ceiling in return for budget cuts, a fight that could last into summer. Rabobank recently released its quarterly dairy report. Lucas Foose of Rabobank explains the current market conditions.
We watched prices come off pretty significantly at the end of 2022 and even into earlier this year. I do think that we've maybe reached a bit of a bottom here, but on a concerning basis, milk prices where we've kind of landed are not necessarily profitable for farmers at current rates, especially when we consider the cost of production.
He says the market is moving into the spring flush period and expects prices to remain steady at $17 to $18. But the second half of the year, he is expecting a demand in recovery driven by China, one of the biggest global importers of U.S. milk. The American Farm Bureau Federation signed another agreement with an agricultural manufacturer on right to repair. Farm News reporter Chad Smith has more on the MOU with CNH Industries.
A new memorandum of understanding between the American Farm Bureau Federation, CASE-IH, and New Holland provides farmers and ranchers the right to repair their own farm equipment. Sam Kiefer, Vice President of Public Policy for the American Farm Bureau, talks about how the agreement will benefit U.S. farmers and ranchers.
This agreement follows a previous agreement with John Deere that now represents more than half of the farm market share in the United States, and combined, these agreements ensure that farmers have the right to repair their own equipment either individually or through independent repair shops by giving them assurances to have access to the diagnostic codes and what they mean, specialty tools, parts, information, manuals, things of that nature.
Kiefer says the memorandum with CASE-IH and New Holland is similar to the one with John Deere.
In focusing on making sure that individuals have the right to repair their equipment, as well as the opportunity to lean on a trusted advisor, be it in an independent repair shop, to make those repairs for them.
He talks about the next steps in moving forward with CASE-IH, Deere, and potentially other manufacturers.
As the conversations continue with CASE and with John Deere, we will be interacting as an organization on behalf of our members with the manufacturers. The agreement indicates that we'll be meeting regularly, at least biannually, to discuss how it's going, the experiences of our members. And as technology emerges and there's new capabilities and challenges, we'll be discussing those and identifying if we need to improve, tweak specific items within the MOU. And we will continue to engage in conversations with other manufacturers on behalf of our members.
For more information on the MOU, go to fb.org. Chad Smith, Washington.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.